Medical information obtained from our website or on the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If you have, or you suspect you might, have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a healthcare provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of the sports doctor, this radio show, or their sponsors.
Hey, everybody, live from Chicago. Happy New Year. It's the Roaring Twenties. Maybe I'll change the name of the show. It's the Sports Doctor. I'm Dr. Bob Weil, sports podiatrist. All things sports medicine, fitness, and wellness. I'm a little under the weather today with a cold, so if I sound a little nasally, it's besides my New York accent. We got a great doubleheader today. Joel Franco, the Italian filmmaker. He's the owner of Chesapeake Films, the writer, the producer of the upcoming documentary, which I'm going to be part of. I'm very excited about this. Youth Sports in America, a documentary film, although I think it's going to be a little bit different title, but it's really, really going to be exciting. And then Beth Fortenberry returns. Beth, she's an actress. She's the author of this great book, Slam Dunk. The true story of basketball's first gold medal team. It's quite fascinating. Then the sports doctor's in your emails. First, I want to welcome back Joel Franco, again, the writer-producer of this new documentary. Joel, welcome back to the sports doctor.
Thank you, Bob. Great to be here.
Great. Give us a little bit of a quickie background of you and Chesapeake Films leading into your interest on this great new product, which is going to be a documentary.
Well, it really started about a year and a half ago when I've been coaching for a couple of years, and talking to other coaches, talking to other parents, talking to people in general who are in the youth sport. I really started to see things on how youth sports is organized. I coach soccer, so my experience is based off of that. And then I started talking to people who coach baseball or other sports, and everybody seems to have the same problems or the same concerns about where we are, where is the system, how bad adults are really messing it up for the kids. And then it just took off from there, really.
Right. Then you ended up as a guest on the Sports Doctor. We really got rolling. Everybody who listens to our show knows the tremendous network of youth sports that we have participating in the Sports Doctor, whether it's Ian Goldberg at iSport 360 or my friends at the National Alliance of Youth Sports or a Gordon McClelland out there in England working with parents in sports, et cetera, et cetera. And the challenge is huge. And one of the reasons, again, Joel, that I co-wrote the book, hashtag Hey Sports Parents, because there is an epidemic of youth sports overuse injuries, both physically and mentally. And we're all familiar with the overzealous parents and the craziness sometimes on the sidelines. There's a lot of good stuff. We talk about it a lot in youth sports.
Absolutely.
For children and adults and families and coaches, but we continue to deal with these challenges of overkill in so many areas. Too much, too soon, too aggressive, too young, do you have the new title in hand, Joe?
Yes, what it's going to be Where Our Children Play, Youth Sports in America.
Yes, it's funny, the original title that I remember you spoke about the few times you've been on the show, it was What's Behind the $15 Billion a Year Industry? Great question, great title. And over the year, I've had two or three guests who said, hey, guess what? It's $17 billion. a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, I know.
Dr. Weil, it's $20 billion. It's a very, very big business. And again, as a sports podiatrist, as a sports medicine person, the idea of having to have people prepared on the sidelines, should there be problems, getting coaches and parents communicating, being able to understand the aggressiveness of full-time activity at very, very early ages. And so the you as a coach and as a parent of youngsters, Joel?
Yes.
Right, then you were smack in the middle of it. And
completely, the, yes.
Right. So we're going to have some tremendous participation and great input. What are some of the things that you really want to stress and educate everybody about on the new documentary? Give me the title again.
Where Our Children Play.
Okay. Give us some highlights, things that you're paying attention to. By the way, when are you looking for this to be done and ready? Just, you know, ballpark.
Good question. We're actually starting. I wish I had a perfect answer.
I think I've answered that each show, yes. Maybe the spring or summer?
That might be a little too optimistic. But hopefully by the fall, if everything works out.
Yes. Well, again, you're a filmmaker. You own Chesapeake Films. So you know what you're doing in regard as far as, you know, what it takes and all of these different parts of it. But what is, you know, besides the parent and the coach, now that you've dipped your feet into talking with, I think two or three of the parents, part of my chapter in my books, Parents' Perspectives, you've spoken to, you know, a lot of the different experts. So what's some of the messages that you're looking to get across?
Well, message number one is, who are we doing this for? That is my number one message, because in the end, we're not doing this for us as parents or coaches. This is not about us. It's about them. And
that's why I like the word who.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. It is about
who
are we doing
this for. I like the word who are we doing this for. Yes.
It is.
Put that in asterisks. Okay, so that's a very, very good first point. What are some others?
That's number one. Number two is the, unfortunately, the part of the obvious that you talk about a lot, which is the overuse, overdoing, I should say, of the kids, because, you know, of parents pushing them or coaches pushing them. Just do too much. There's no breaks.
Schedule.
Schedule is insane.
Yeah.
I mean, and then coaches... You know, coaches are kind of stuck in the old, I don't even know if it's an old, they're just stuck. They believe that, we have to be like the pros. And it's like, kids are not professionals. Kids are kids. Hopefully, one or two of those will become professionals. But when that happens, then that's a different situation. But an eight-year-old is not a pro, and an eight-year-old should not be practicing, you know, 7 days a week. That's kind of like insane.
Yes.
Or playing 7 days a week, these like ridiculous, you know, long trips, traveling teams, and spending a fortune, which would be my number three point, I guess. All these things, you know, it's just insane. The kids can't rest, kids don't get sleep, you know, which is all obviously combined.
Yes. Now we've made a lot of progress. I've been talking about this 25 years, give or take a few weeks. I'll check it for you. We've made a lot of progress. We've got a lot smarter. The word schedules is a very, very big deal, because this is what we're still locked into, the more is better kind of thinking in scheduling. My famous, the late, great Jim Vickery, sports psychologist, who spent 3, 4, 5 years on the radio with me, also made a very, very big point, which was, it's got to be fun. Little League woke up maybe 10, 15 years ago and realized that 40% of the kids weren't re-signing up. They were quitting.
And that's so sad.
And so we've made a lot of progress in understanding the mental game. There's not a season that goes by, Joel, that we don't see a fight on the sidelines or ranting, raving sports parents.
Yeah.
The only thing
I should have
added to my book title and sports grandparents. You know, I'm one of them.
They're even worse.
Right. It really, really is. So bringing attention to these things, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, we've had various individuals. I had Ian Goldberg on a couple of weeks ago. Again, we were talking about the importance of communicating with coaches
yes.
and parents, understanding, you know, to the fact. One of the chapters in my book, as you know, is called Youth, Sports, and Drugs. This is a big
Correct.
Deal. Half
Huge.
These kids are living on ibuprofen or over-the-counter medicine. And you know why? Dr. Wild, my son's got to play. His ankles are hurting him. He's got to play. So this kind of ridiculousness is some
yep.
of the things that we pay big, big attention to. I had a financial expert on a few months ago. Also, Joel, you mentioned it, the expense of clubs.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Teams. Yes. And again, if your boy or girl is excited about and they're participating in and it's a good experience on a travel team and there's a lot of them, hey, great. But if we start to see that we're running into problems here, then a lot of times, again, because again, we're starting with the understanding that there's so much overkill, you know?
No question about it. I mean, kids need to be allowed to be kids.
What's the website that people could find out about you and Chesapeake Films and the documentary? Is there the best site to find out about what you're doing?
Yes. People can get a hold of me on both Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, at Doc Youth Sports. And they can also find me on the website, the movie website, which is obviously www.usports-themovie.com.
Give us also a few of the individuals that both of us have been in so much contact with that you're looking to participate in various areas of your documentary, Joel.
The list is long, but just to name a few are some of the ones you already mentioned. People like Gordon in England, who is amazing what he's doing with how to help people communicate with parents. Of course, Reid Mulby, the one and only. I don't even have words to describe how awesome he is. You know, people like Ruth Nichols, Erica Suter, the National Alliance. I mean, there's just so many, you know, Steve Horwitz. I mean, it's just like so many people, Matt Young, so many people who have been helping me, like yourself, obviously, that I don't, it's just incredible. I know Vijay at Balance, can't think of the name of it now. It's just like so many people that have reached
yes.
out to me via Vijay Stanley, I believe his last name is. So many, like I said, so many people have reached out to me via Twitter or through the website and just share their stories or wanting to know more about, wanting to know how they can help and spurring me along the way and keep telling me, you know, keep working
Absolutely.
On it. You know, it's just like, it's such an amazing community of people that.
Yes.
That's
why
amazing.
I'm very optimistic. I'm very optimistic, and I want us to have a big positive spin on this with all the challenges. There's a lot of good sides of things. You know, one of the chapters in my book is called The Prodigy Sports. Every expert we'll
yep.
have on in your documentary is going to rant and rave that your son and daughter should play different sports as they grow
mm-hmm.
up, and I agree, times five. But when you have a young gymnast or a young figure skater, which is my world many times, or a young ballet dancer, even soccer, you have the challenge of this kid not wanting to play other sports.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I call them the prodigy sport. So it's a special section of kids that sometimes we'll see. A young gymnast at 6, 7, 8 years old doesn't want to play other sports. She wants to do what she wants to do all these days. So the challenges abound, and being able to bring in all these different perspectives. I think I had Reid on the show a month and a half ago with all the great work that he does. And, you know, Gordon in England, he's got one of the greatest titles, you know, working with parents in sports, you know. Good luck.
Oh, it's perfect.
Yes, it is.
He's a wealth of information.
Yes. And then they could tune my show in because I'm on the following week on UK Radio Health, that great network of holistic health with my friend Johan in that particular area. So we're going to really look forward to it. How long is Chesapeake Films in the last minute or two? Give us a little bit of a story about Chesapeake Films, Joe.
Well, really, it just came about because I started to wanting to tell my own stories, you know. I just wanted to put together projects that I wanted to work on. And I started slowly making, you know, little project here, little project there. And then I started making documentaries. They just kind of happened. I wasn't looking for it. I just found one project and I thought, okay, let me do it. And then I just fell in love with it. I mean, I always love making movies, of course, but it just like it's such a great medium because you get to learn about things that you didn't know anything about before. And you just, and I love telling stories, so I like to tell different stories, but always focused on people. And so that's basically it. That's how it started, and then it just keep building.
Yeah, so being part of the whole educational world, you know, really we're on the same team. Different mediums.
Yes.
And we're going to really look forward. We're going to have you on a couple of different times in the future. You keep us aware of what's happening and how it's going. Give me again, Joel, the information quickly that they could find out about you and the documentary in Chesapeake.
Yeah, they can reach me out on Twitter and Instagram at DocYouthSport and Sports. And they can also get me on the website, www.youthsports-themovie.com. And I always respond to people.
Great. Hold on, Joel. Hold on. Everybody be right back. It's the Sports Doc. Hey, everybody. It's Dr. Bob Weil, a sports doctor. I'm excited to announce the release of my new book, co-written with Sharky Zartman, hashtag HeySportsParents, an essential guide for any parent with a child in sports. You know, Sharky is a former Hall of Fame volleyball player. She's the mom of two daughters who became Division I volleyball players. Together, we have over 70 years of combined youth sports experience. The goal of the book? Give you the essential tools and guidance to make your experience as a sports parent the best it could be. Hashtag Hey Sports Parents is divided into four sections. The first section, Sports Parenting 101. Sharky talks everything about parenting, about coaching, that whole interaction between parents and coaches, coaching your own kid. What are the things to really pay attention to? The second section is the Sports Doctors In, yours truly. My discussion of injury prevention and treatment, choosing the best shoes, youth sports and drugs, essential exercises, the dilemma of youth football, orthotics. Third section, experts speak out. We bring together eight different experts in nutrition and sports performance and mental training in all aspects of coaching in that section. The last section is the parents' perspective, some insights from about a half a dozen parents of athletes. So everyone, hey, get out your megaphone, spread the word. Now available on Amazon. Order now. You'll be more confident. So will your young athlete. Hashtag, hey sports parents. Hey, man, we're live. It's the Roaring Twenties, live from Chicago. Back to the sports doctor, Dr. Bob Weil, sports podiatrist. I'm excited to have back Beth Fortenberry. She's an award-winning writer and producer, and she's got this book,
slam dunk basketball's first Olympic gold medal team. It's a tremendous story. Beth, welcome back to the Sports Doctor.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Thank you so much.
Give us a little bit of a background with you. I know, again, Beth is an actress. She's a former Playboy bunny.
Yummy.
Yes. Hey, come on, man. That's one out of a million. One out of a million. or more. Give us some background on you and what led you to write this great book.
Well, I'm very proud to let you know that it's a bestseller, an international bestseller, and I'm absolutely so happy about that. And the reviews have been wonderful. And how I got involved is, I grew up thinking that everybody had a cousin, a 6'8" cousin, that had an Olympic gold medal in the hall closet, high on the shelf at the back. I thought everybody had that. And then when my cousin called me and she says, we'd like to make a movie about Pop, Joe Fortenberry, you know, because he invented the slam dunk. What do you think? And I said, whoa, that's a great story. Let me look into it. And I got into it. And I'm telling you, it's 7 years later. I am so thrilled about the story. It is so wonderful. It's so exciting and uplifting. Oh, it's just, and it reads so fast. It's just a wonderful experience.
Yes, you go back to the originator, James Naismith. When was that he invented, quote-unquote?
1891. He invented it in Springfield, Massachusetts. He was working at the YMCA, and all he wanted to do was keep his job.
And go they figure.
They just needed a game that could be played between the football and the baseball seasons that could be played indoors. And he tried lacrosse, soccer, you know, all variations and everything. And he came up with basketball. And one of the most thrilling parts of the book is when the first basket is made.
Was that a swish, or did it go through a wooden basket?
No, it went through a peach basket.
All right. I knew it had to be. It couldn't have been. Of course, we're all familiar now. You know, the slam dunk contest has always been one of the most exciting, dynamic parts of the whole All-Star Weekend.
With
Michael Jordan and all of these great Dominique Wilkins. And, you know, I'm trying to remember. You might know. You wrote the book. When did the slam dunk become part of the NBA and the All-Star? You know?
Well, the original slam dunk was named slam dunk in 1935 when a New York Times reporter saw it at one of the Olympic trial games at Madison Square Garden. And he saw it and he says, whoa, this is like when you dump dunk your donut into a cup of coffee. It's a slam dunk. And it stuck.
What an analogy that is. You know, let me get a donut over here. Also, I'm going to ask you again a couple of times. Give me the website or the best place people can find out about the book. Get it.
Well, the best place to get it now is on Amazon.com. Just put in Fortenberry, Fortenberry, and it'll come right up.
Did we lose you?
No, I'm right here. Just put in Fortenberry in the search bar, and it'll come right up, and it'll say slam dunk, and the cover's right there and everything. It's right there. And it comes in a Kindle version and a paperback version.
Did you talk about ever that they were ever going to make a film out of this or something in the future?
And that was the whole point. This was a screenplay first. And I had friends at DreamWorks, Fox, and Universal, and they all told me the same thing. Make it a book, and it'll get made faster. And I said, I just wrote a screenplay. I have to go write a book now? And, okay. I always wanted to write a book, so back to the
You and me both.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. You know, right, absolutely. Hey, I got to get together with my first guest, Joel, you know, the documentary, Chesapeake Films, you know, would be
I love his clip.
Yes, we're very, very excited about that whole world, as you know. It'll be excited to see this thing come to fruition. Getting back again to your project. Now, again, you come from the acting world. Are you still an actress?
Whenever. I've been so busy with this project. I do little parts here and there. I just did something on Stumptown. I do little things. I do commercials whenever. But I've been so involved with this. This has really been taking, Slam Dunk is just my whole life right now. So, but if a part came along, yes, I would do it.
Right. How is the basketball world, whether it's the NBA or the international game or college basketball, how are they embracing your story in the book?
Oh, the response has been overwhelming. I am just thrilled. So many high-level basketball players, people that have read the book that know, say, I didn't know this about basketball, and I've been playing for years. They didn't know. So it's wonderful. It's wonderful, the response. Everybody's just thrilled to know. They didn't know when the slam dunk was invented. And to know who invented it, it's very exciting. And to know when, many people knew that James Naismith invented the game, but they didn't know what the trials and tribulations they went through to win the first gold medal in 1936 with Hitler. And there were so many, the depression, there were so many obstacles. I'm telling you, it is one of the most exciting stories I've ever been involved with.
So the gold medal team was, that was in Germany, was it 36 or whatever the year was?
Yes, 1936.
Right, with Hitler's Germany and the fact that the Olympics. Wow, crazy. Who invented the slam dunk?
Joe Fortenberry, my cousin.
Aha, your cousin.
Yes. Yes.
And the I would think that did you get a signed book back from Michael Jordan yet?
I'm going to send it to him.
I would imagine he would be looking at. Give us some parts with this mega of that you have added that are part of the story in Slam Dunk.
Parts that I've added? Well, it's a true story. I mean, of course, it's been dramatized to make a good movie.
No, parts that you have highlighted that really tell the story. What are some of the things that really are a part of the meat of the book that continue to get you so excited?
Well, I think one of the things that's most interesting to most people is that James Naismith invented basketball and met his wife all in the same week. And they have one of the most enduring and wonderful love stories. And she invented the football helmet, and she organized the first women's basketball team.
That's quite a couple.
Right. Oh, they were just a dynamite couple. And also, when her second child was born, she had typhoid, and she became deaf. So they had their own life, their own signals, the way they talked to each other. She was very much a part of the deaf community. And he was with her. They were side by side the whole time, no matter what they went through. They foreclosed on their house because they were having money issues. Naismith always wouldn't take any endorsements. And people all around him were making money from ointments and creams and basketballs and you name it. And he just wouldn't. He says, it's my gift it's my gift to the world. It's my gift to God. I won't take any money for it. He never patented it.
It's interesting with the very recent death of the great commissioner, David Stern.
Yes.
And the reverberation of so many stories, how he brought the sport globally, and it's what it is today, and all of these great, great stories. And that even piques the interest of what and how it came before. Especially when you're talking about going all of these years back, and the gold medal team that was on that was cousin Joe. Was he on the team?
Joe
the gold medal team.
Oh yes, he was. He was the highest scorer of the game, and they won in 4 inches of pouring down rain and mud. 4 inches of sloshy mud. They looked like pigs instead of basketball players.
Unbelievable. Is there any film of that stuff?
There is. The Chapman brothers, who happened to be on the Canadian team, their hobby was photography. And they have a very, very grainy, hard-to-see film of that first game. I mean, of the game at the Olympics. But you can hardly see it. It's very hard to see.
And probably way back then, 6'8", he was considered one of the real tall guys, you know?
There was only one person taller than him, and his name was Willard Schmidt. They called him Smitty. And he was on the same team, and Joe and Smitty were best friends, and they were always roommates. And Joe was the first person he had ever seen that was taller than him. So they had quite a rivalry at first, but then they became best friends.
Yeah, 6'8" today, you're like, you could be a guard in the basketball at 6'8", the physicality. But again, the term and the title, slam dunk, is exciting to everybody who hears it, because we've all at some time or another watched and been enthralled with some of these acrobatics and how it was done. It's a fascinating story to find out about, where this came from. When did the book first came out? Wasn't it a few months ago?
The first book came out, the e-book came out October 31st, and the paperback came out December 19th.
Yeah, that's what I thought, and we were waiting for a month and a half to get you on. But see, we have an advantage. Now we know it. Now we know it's a bestseller. If it was then, we might have been hoping in that particular case. You know, the Olympics are such a big deal in so many different ways. Of course, basketball is one of the tremendous highlights. And the first gold medal team, what was the first, Olympic basketball team? Is it decades before the 36 team that won?
They had demonstrations. But it wasn't in the Olympics. This is the first time that basketball was played in the Olympics. And Germany was the country that decided, yes, they could be in. And there they were. And they won. The first gold medal was won by the USA. And it was played against Canada.
Wow. Yes. And especially when you would think about the fact that the not only did they win the gold, it was their first appearance. And it was the beginning of basketball as an Olympic sport, right?
Absolutely right. Absolutely.
Really, and so the namesmiths who invented the game, and hundred and something odd years ago,
1891. So
really,
1991. So 29 years ago, if my math is correct.
Yeah, really. and his wife invented the football helmet.
Yes. Yes, she was. Yeah, he was playing on a team, and there was a lot of injuries. And she says, "Oh, let me sew this up." And so she sewed up a helmet and then cut holes for the ears. And the men loved it. And then it became leather, and expanded after that. But she made the first one, and the men just loved it. And Amos Stagg was the coach of that team, and a lot of people know that Amos Stagg has a huge history in football. So.
Yes, it's an interesting combination. We're going to talk more about it with Beth Fortenberry and the book Slam Dunk. We'll be right back, everybody. It's the Sports Doctor. I'm Dr. Bob Weil. Hey, it's Dr. Bob. School Uniforms by Tommy Hilfiger is setting a new standard within the school uniform market. More schools are understanding the value that uniforms provide, school pride and identification being one of them. Another is the well-recognized reduction of student pressure to keep up with classmates in the real world of what to wear each day to school. School Uniforms by Tommy Hilfiger provides amazing quality and value to its partner schools and families. It is truly the first brand in this market that students are excited about wearing. Go to the website. GlobalSchoolWear.com. GlobalSchoolWear.com. joefortune.com. Hey, everybody, we are back live from Chicago. It's the Sports Doctor. I'm Dr. Bob Weil. Happy New Year. It's our first live show of the Roaring Twenties. We're talking with Beth Fortenberry, award-winning writer, producer, and she's the author of this exciting new book out the last couple of months, Slam Dunk, the story of a basketball's first Olympic gold medal team, 1936. And so the feedback like you're getting from the whole different community, like you said, has been so exciting. And it's great to see again that the history and the, you know, the slam dunk continues to be one of the most exciting parts of the whole all-star experience in the NBA. So every time someone else is doing the slam dunk during the season, they're selling a book. Right?
Okay.
Yeah.
For that.
A young basketball player, you know, even in today's game with the incredible increased athletic ability of all of the women athletes, where there's even some dunking going on in the women's game, you know, one of the first things a young player of almost any age starts dreaming about and thinking about is, oh, my gosh, dunking that basketball. It's almost of myth-like proportions, isn't it, Beth?
Yes, it is. If you can do it, it's exciting. There's even books on how somebody under 6 feet tall can learn how to dunk. It's pretty exciting.
Yes, especially if he jumps off a mini tram. Then he can definitely, or if you lower the basket like everybody's grown up, and then, you know, the basket in the backyard or on the driveway was 7 feet, 8 feet, 9 feet. Maybe,
right.
Hopefully, the kid grew into, you know, being able to follow through in that particular case. And so tell us some of the another couple of interesting stories or parts of the book that you're excited about.
Well, I really want to acknowledge Fog Allen. He was the man who led the campaign to get the 1936 team into the Olympics. And even
Fog Allen Fieldhouse, right? University of Kansas.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
And Kansas is the cradle of basketball development. I mean, Naismith was at University of Kansas over 35 years. Gene Johnson, it was at Wichita State, and he was the coach of the team. It's a very exciting history there in Kansas.
Yeah, they're still a great team, still one of the top teams.
Mm-hmm. The Jayhawkers.
In that particular, yes, exactly. So Fog Allen. Another one of these legends that you entwined into the story. Who else?
Mm-hmm. Well, Gene Johnson, he's the one who allowed the slam dunk when Joe Fortenberry was first doing it at West Texas State Teacher College. His coach told him it was flashy, it was too flashy, undignified, and ungentlemanly. And so he wouldn't let him do it. He could do it before the game, but he couldn't do it in the game. And then the crowd got so excited when he was doing it before the game that the coach made him stop doing it even before the game. So when Joe went to McPherson, Kansas, to first be on the team with Gene Johnson and first met Willard Schmidt, who was, you know, 1 inch taller than him, he and Smitty were in such they were so competitive, and Joe had to get the position. He had to beat out Willard Schmidt. And he did it. He said he got so angry that he did the slam dunk in front of everybody. And there was absolute silence. And Joe goes up to Gene Johnson and says, "I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to. I know it's too flashy, undignified, and ungentlemanly. I'll never do it again." And Gene Johnson says, "Are you kidding? That's the most exciting shot I've ever seen. You can be, you can be as flashy."
You know, it's amazing. Back in the days, back in the days of the great Lou Alcindor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who ended up going to UCLA and won all those titles, and Lou Alcindor was a young man coming out of New York. And some of these players were so tall. And actually, the dunk in college basketball was banned for X amount of years because they felt it was just too much. It was too often. You know, because Jabbar was so much taller, Will Chamberlain, et cetera. You know, Will Chamberlain was Kansas.
Right. Yes.
So it's amazing how that drug, I don't know how long they banned it. Maybe just in his college career. But what was the year when this was happening?
This is in the 70s. There was an issue. They banned it from basketball. They wouldn't let you do the slam dunk, and then it was brought back. I don't know the exact year of that. I'm not an expert. After 1936, my expertise is between 1891 and 1936. Ask me anything.
The little story just said about your cousin, where he had that incident of the dunking in the game. When was that?
That would have been in 1935. Before they went to the Madison Square Garden for the trials. So that would have been, 1935, maybe late 1934.
Right. So, again, it's a plethora of stories and histories to this whole exciting event. And if anything, it probably gets more. You're already talking about who's going to be in it this year and a couple years ago. Everybody, I think, remembers Michael Jordan taking off from the foul line with his famous dunk. And, of course, my alma mater, Louisville, with the Doctors of Dunk and Daryl Griffith and whatever. I'll start in with some of these stories. And the more I'm talking to you, it really is exciting. What's the website again, Beth, that they could find out and find the book and about the history?
www.bethfortenberry.com. We're rebuilding it right now, but that's where it's going to be. Hit the book tab, and there you go. We'll have information on there.
I would imagine soon you'll probably be doing a circuit, maybe, and doing some speaking on the book.
I am. I'm already starting that. Hi, I'm going to be in Amarillo, Texas, and West Texas State University in February 15th. I've been invited to go to Kansas, and I'm really looking forward to go to Kansas because I really want to see those folks. I met the people at McPherson, and they just have such a rich history there, and they're such good people. And I'll be seeing a guy named Rich Hughes, who was my mentor and helped me through all the writing of this, and he wrote the book Netting Out Basketball, and I really want to see him and give him credit.
Well, Beth, I want to thank you. Time flew by like I knew it would. Beth Fortenberry, she just gave us the information, and good luck. We'll have you back with the excitement, and we'll look forward probably to the movie.
That's what we're looking for.
Right. Hold on, Beth. Everybody will be right back with the Sports Doctors in.
You live in or near Aurora, Illinois, and you're into sports, fitness at any level, or your son and daughter is, you cannot forget about your feet. Your feet affect everywhere else. There are complex motions that come into play, especially in sports. Your ankles, knees, hips, and back all are affected with your foot mechanics. Come visit the office, Dr. Bob, and get evaluated. Check what shoes are best for you. I offer prescription orthotics, which is usually one of the major tools for treatment and prevention of foot-related ankle and leg problems. Also, enhancing performance. Step or two quicker. Call 630-898-3505 or go to sportsdoctorradio.com.
Hey, everybody, we're back live from Chicago at the New Year's first Sports Doctors In segment. Dr. Bob Weil, sports podiatrist. Our email is drrweil, W-E-I-L, Sports Doctor, yahoo.com. As always, great guests coming up. Give you a little bit of a feedback here. Next week, Andrew Golden is the Director of Development for Athletes Intelligence. Great technology, concussion awareness, prevention, the vector mouth guard. Looking forward to him joining us. And my local friend, Suzanne Gray, her facility, Right Fit, and her history of exercise and autistic children. Very, very important stuff. She'll be joining us. Following week, I'm going to be local again. Mary Ratchford, she's a physical therapist with Physical Therapy and Balance Centers, will be returning. And then nurse Brooke Schwartz, going to be talking with CBD, exciting CBD technology. It's everywhere. And I'm a real advocate of the safety and uses, indications for that. Adam sends an email. Do high top sneakers prevent ankle sprains? And the answer, Adam, really is no. Although if we really want to nitpick, the fact that there is a fabric that your ankles touch sends messages, and sometimes that can help the proprioceptive rebalancing. But the high tops are never strong enough to make a difference. They can make somewhat of a difference, but we even see it all levels of basketball many times now. Mid-level shoes aren't out of the ordinary like they used to be. So I'm going to use this instance, Adam, to say strengthen the feet and ankles is something that should be proactive and routinely done. And then also consider if there's a history of ankle problems, whether it's taping, or whether it's a removable ankle brace for protection. But as a general rule, not much protection or difference with high tops. Phyllis says, do you think the National Football League and the NCAA have ducked the perils of concussions or hidden the perils of concussions in football? I think, Phyllis, there's no doubt about it. Well, my guest last month, Matt Chaney, the historian on football, talked about the concerns of concussions and the physicality of the sport going back to the 1900s. But the last 25 years as the real topic of CTE, brain injuries, concussions has become such a big deal. There has not been great cooperation, my opinion, at all, as far as the major leagues in football and the big-time games, not looking to, well, we don't know, there's research, we're trying to make it safer. So I absolutely feel that they bear some responsibility in not paying enough attention and not really including lots of awareness. Knock on wood, thank God, that's changing. What do we got? Tom says, my 13-year-old daughter plays lots of soccer 4 days a week. A lot of it is indoors. Her heel's been bothering her for the past almost 2 years. You know, Tom, when that's the case, because there is a large growth center on the back and bottom of the heel as a young boy and girl grows up, usually that growth center, which is the heel bone solidifying, comes together at about 14, 15 years old, maybe 13 years old or so with girls, and it's susceptible to being aggravated, whether we're running, especially with running and jumping, and also especially with soccer, where we're famous for putting young 5, 6, 7-year-olds, we're ready with cleats, and there's a cluster of cleats sitting right under the heel. But with your history, that it's been repetitive or consistent, you really, Tom, want to see podiatry. We've seen great success with even the most difficult of these growth center irritations called Sievers syndrome with proper orthotics. But initially, get her out of cleats, get her in a multi-purpose shoe, and then see podiatry and make sure that she's in the proper soccer shoes and pay serious attention to the possibility of custom orthotics as one of our best answers. Because foot mechanics, imagine flat feet, imagine high arches, they can contribute to persistent aggravation of that growth center because of shearing forces and pounding. So check that out. Stephanie says, my 12-year-old daughter is a serious figure skater. She's had arch pain on and off. We've tried to change boots. What about orthotics? Stephanie, I've been putting orthotics in figure skates for almost four decades. As many of my listeners know, my famous poster boy, Evan Lysacek, was the 2010, can't believe it's almost 10 years next month, Olympic figure skating champion. Evan was 10 years old when I put orthotics in his skates. I'm still putting orthotics in young kids' skates, younger than your daughter. It's our biggest weapon to solve the arch pain problem. Sometimes over-the-counter devices, Superfeet, different kinds of Dr. Scholl's can make a difference. I'm assuming that you've got someone who really knows their way around boots, who's dealing with your daughter's boots. But the exciting secondary part of orthotics and figure skating is everything will improve. I've never had a coach call me and say, you know, Dr. Bob, the kid's slower. It balances off. Proper orthotics and figure skates enhance edging, stability, balance. That's because the job of the orthotic is optimum positioning of the foot and joint. And boots are, even custom boots, are about fit, not about the optimum biomechanical positioning of the joints. So that's a big deal. Check out my website, sportsdoctorradio.com. There's articles on that. And by the way, everybody, sportsdoctorradio.com. If you go to radio shows, you can go back almost 10 years and listen to shows. You can go over to newspaper articles and magazines. We've written so many different articles on so many different topics, and many of them in one of our sponsors, the excellent magazine, Lower Extremity Review. If we have enough time, Steve, I'm a 50-year-old jogger. I've had leg length difference of about a quarter inch, and sciatica. Is a heel lift a good idea? You know, Steve, if that's the case, that you've got a quarter inch leg length difference, then a lift, optimally, the lift incorporated into an orthotic, because the orthotic controls that leg length difference in the three body planes. A lift is a single body plane, just moving you up. But you want to pay attention to the leg length difference. I have found chiropractic medicine as the best designator of what that true difference is, whether it's functional because of hip rotation, hip tilting, or anatomical because of leg length, bone length. But you want to check that out. Hey, everybody, it's great to be back with you. Happy New Year, Roaring 20s. Catch you next week. Thank you. It's the Sports Doctor.